Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mesut Özil. ¡Qué golazo de Alexis Sánchez! Esto es un auténtico golazo, fantástico. Minuto 27, lo ha hecho absolutamente todo.
This is Arscast Extra.
Welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. I'm pretty sure this is a goodly morning, James.
It is a goodly morning. I was trying to think if there's a word, if we need to upgrade, really, for a morning.
Superbly morning? I don't know.
Superbly morning. I mean, it's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas, isn't it? It's come early this weekend.
Boy.
I mean, it was pretty terrific all round, I'd say.
Yeah, I think
a couple
so.
Of minor blips, one at White Hart Lane that I'm sort of, you know, casually averting my gaze from, but everything else, thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah, you know, and some people would have a lot to say about this weekend. Some people wouldn't have very much to say at all, you know.
No thoughts, no comments.
That guy might not, he might not have much to say this weekend.
It's tempting to do the entire second half of the show just answering all questions like that.
Yeah.
In tribute.
Here, dear Andrew and James, whenever everyone's fit, who's our best 11?
No thoughts, no comments.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he looked brilliantly sad, didn't he? I mean, I it feels like he hates his job.
And his life at the moment. Yeah. It looks a bit
well,
like
Well, he's
that,
admitted yeah. as much, hasn't he, in Manchester?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, his poor life in a luxury hotel. You know, he's been speaking out about how desperately sad and lonely that existence is. And then I suppose there must come a point in your life where you go, look at what I've done. Look upon my works and see what I've done. I've introduced Marouane Fellaini with 4 minutes to go, and within 2 minutes of coming on, he's given away a penalty. did you see the clip? I saw a clip as I was flicking around Twitter last night. There was no context to it, but basically what I'm assuming was a couple of United fans sitting there. One of them is wearing the big Fellaini wig, and he just sort of takes the wig off and storms off. I assume that's after Fellaini had given away the penalty, which was really rather amusing.
I mean, guys, if you know a United fan, it's very clear what you have to get them for Christmas. It's a Fellaini wig.
For the United fan in your life this Christmas, Fellaini wig.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, maybe forget about Christmas, just get it for them today.
Yeah.
I think we should all wear Fellaini wigs, really, in tribute to what he contributed to the weekend. I mean, the funniest thing about that is I've watched it again this morning. I'm not entirely sure it's a penalty. The guy really throws himself over the tackle, right?
That's what I thought. I thought it was like a little bit clumsy of a tackle, but he didn't stick his leg out. He sort of hung his leg back and the Everton guy threw himself into him and tumbled over. It did look at first stage like it was probably a penalty, but when you see the replays, it probably wasn't, or is a little bit generous anyway, to say the least. And that, of course, makes it all the more amusing because that would inflict more pain on Jose Mourinho.
Absolutely. Although he was, you know, doing stuff to get his own mood up during the game. Have you seen that clip of him sort of taking a sniff out of his coat sleeve?
Yes. Bizarre. I'm not sure what that was, and I think it would be... I mean, I know what it looks like. I know what it looks like, but I think we'd be probably wise not to make any suggestions about what it could be, you know?
Of course.
Just had a cold and he's got some Vicks Vapor Rub on his sleeve.
I think it is.
I think that's exactly what it is.
Vicks Vapor Rub, as they call it.
Jose, what were you doing, Jose?
No thoughts, no comment.
All right, okay.
You almost couldn't blame him. I mean, he's having a torrid time. He hasn't won a game against the top half of the Premier League for a long while, apparently, now. His record is not good. I think it was something like one win in a million games or something like that for United. So, yeah, I mean, long may it last.
Oh,
he does seem miserable. He does seem to... Yeah, I don't know if it is a kind of weird... I mean, is it like a... you know, like Scrooge or whatever, he's being shown his deeds and he's sort of going through that process of realising how poorly he's treated people all his life. I don't know.
I don't care. I'm just enjoying it. I said this last week and I said it on the podcast on Friday that while it's going on, I'm going to enjoy it to the full. You know, I'm going to bask in the glory and the warm glow of Jose Mourinho's pain. Schadenfreude it might be, but hey, maybe it won't last forever. Maybe it will. And if it does, then, you know, the world will probably be a much happier place. But yeah, great. And of course, what happened at the end of the Chelsea-Manchester City game was in some ways disgraceful. I thought the Aguero tackle was absolutely horrendous. He launched himself at David Luiz, didn't he? Those two have a bit of previous, of course. So that's a four-game ban for Sergio Aguero. Which is obviously going to impact City a great deal. And then he's going to miss the game against us in a couple of weeks' time, as is Fernandinho, who who was victim to a little bit of Cesc Fabregas being a bit Cesc Fabregas.
Yeah, very much so. Did he sort of slap at him? Well, slap's probably an exaggeration, but he definitely touched his face, didn't he? And
yeah.
I'm sure there are a few words in there too. I wouldn't hasten to suggest there'll be something said as well.
Yeah.
Fernandinho reacted. The Aguero challenge was unbelievable. I mean, speaking of videos online, there's a great one where someone's overlaid Martin Tyler's famous commentary of Aguero's title-winning goal to the tackle. So as he runs in on Luis, he just goes, "Aguero!"
It's
very funny.
We're laughing at something that's really quite horrible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Luis is lucky that he got away from that without an injury.
He is. If it had been John Terry, we would, of course, be applauding Sergio Aguero this morning. But
oh, yeah, getting up for an MBE, probably. But Aguero, I mean, that's the thing about Aguero. Like, he's probably the best footballer in the Premier League. He's certainly maybe the best, you know, pure goal scorer. But he just seems to play enough games in any given season. And it's usually due to injuries. But this season, that means he'll have missed seven games from suspension alone.
Yeah.
I'm delighted, to be honest.
No, me too. I guess it also would probably speak to an inner frustration that when a player lashes out like that, they really are frustrated at maybe just the way that particular game was going, but also things in general. I don't know. I mean, it must be very disheartening to be a great striker playing in a team that literally has no defence to speak of. They're really, really poor defensively, but look, it was fun, it was entertaining, it was great to watch the end of that particular game, and even though it was Chelsea that won it, and obviously that's not something any of us can really enjoy, you know, those kind of handbags and histrionics and stuff, it's just terribly entertaining, I think.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was a bit reminiscent, actually, of Spurs at Stamford Bridge last year, wasn't
it? Yeah.
When right at the end of the season they lost their cool. It's a little bit early, so you've got a bit soon on that one, but yeah, happy to see it nonetheless.
All right, and of course then, to make everything better, or to improve things even further, we had a really fantastic win against West Ham at the London Stadium. Go on.
Absolutely. Well, if we're dealing with other people, we haven't even mentioned Liverpool's efforts to entertain us at Bournemouth.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. I watched the match of the day, too, last night, because I was out yesterday. I didn't see it in real time. But, what a fucking bottle job that was.
Yeah, I mean, really was. It was sort of, it was like vintage Arsenal, you know, mid-noughties Arsenal. 3-1 up and they lost 4-3, just completely collapsed. I mean, again, talk about a team who are good going forward but don't have much of a defence. I think the same thing could maybe be levelled at them. They had a couple of players missing, you know, Lucas at centre-back, Milner at left-back. It doesn't look that strong really on paper, and Bournemouth exploited that. And Jack Wilshere, he played all right from what I saw, you know, tidy without ever being dominating, but you know, a good contribution to the Arsenal cause from Jack Wilshere.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, a good weekend all in all, and just once more for Jose Mourinho. Sorry, had to be done. So look, will we move on to ours? Because there's plenty to talk about from an Arsenal point of view, and plenty to enjoy from an Arsenal point of view. As much as we like to take all the pleasure we can from the misery of other people, I think we should also take some pleasure from what Arsenal did this weekend. And after Chelsea had beaten Manchester City on Saturday, everyone was saying, well, that's a real statement of intent from Chelsea. It shows their title-winning credentials, and I think that's absolutely right. And it just struck me that the game that we were facing against West Ham was a game in which we could do something similar. Now, I know I'm not saying West Ham or Manchester City in terms of the stature, but just it felt to me that if we could go there and really do them, really turn them over, it would be a fantastic response to what Chelsea did. Not just win, and I would have taken a 1-0, absolutely no problem, but going there and doing something that we haven't really done, like absolutely hammering a team, and we did it. It was fantastic. I know it was a bit late and everything, but it was just beautiful to watch.
It really was, yeah. I mean, it was a proper battering, you know. Yeah. I guess we did that against Ludogorets earlier this season as well. But in the Premier League, I can't think of too many recently like that. Can you?
I don't know, the whole game, I think we won... Did we win
4-1 or 4-0 or something?
Yeah,
4-0 maybe.
And of course, there was a Sunderland game away, but it was a little less convincing, I think. I mean, the response that we got from the substitutes that day at Sunderland was fantastic, and Giroud came on and scored a couple of great goals. But I just think from the way that we played throughout that game, from the first minute, we were finding space in behind West Ham. Monreal, Oxlade-Chamberlain down the left-hand side. Maybe a bit of better movement, better balls into the box early on. I think we would have been ahead much sooner than we were.
Yeah, when you look at the chances we could have had in the first half, I mean, the score, I guess, could have been anything by the end. And we were helped by, you know, West Ham traditionally, historically, should I say, is a difficult place to go. It certainly isn't at the moment. I think they're not helped in any small part by that stadium, which I wasn't there, but speaking to people who were, is apparently a nightmare.
It looks weird on the telly, doesn't it? It just looks... Yeah. It looks... Like the camera angle, maybe it's just something we have to get used to because we're not used to seeing football in that stadium. But it does look really distant. Actually, at the start of the second half, I don't know if you noticed, when the players were out on the pitch and the game was about to kick off, from the camera position, they zoomed in really quite close because the players were far away. You could see what would have been the running track around, and then the camera sort of slowly zoomed in to give us the pitch side view that we would have during the game. It just shows you how far away the cameras are from the pitch, let alone the supporters.
Yeah, that's it. And I mean, it seemed completely devoid of atmosphere and basically empty by the end of the game, of course. I mean, you know, you can't blame them, I suppose, given the scoreline. But Arsenal were at it right from the first whistle. And I thought, I mean, we've all enjoyed laughing at Liverpool this weekend. We could probably enjoy another laugh if we remember that it was actually Liverpool who tried to sign Alexis Sanchez, you know, a few summers ago from Barcelona. That didn't come off for them. We ended up with him and he was just... supremely good at the weekend, I thought.
Yeah. I watched your On the Whistle video. You were very, very taken with the performance. I don't think I've heard you sound that delighted in quite some time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I really was. I think I just thought it was an excellent display, and I thought the three goals were of such high quality. I mean, the first one really, you know, took my breath away. I mean, we shouldn't get carried away, of course. It was he who created the opener as well. Francis Coquelin playing a really big part with a good interception high up the field. And then Alexis skipped away and gave Ozil a tap in. He's now scored more goals for Arsenal than he has for any other club he's played for in his career.
Wow. I believe that's also true of Alexis Sanchez.
Oh, really?
Apparently.
Lovely.
I think I read that somewhere this weekend, but I might have had a glass or two of wine. But I definitely know that's true of the Mesut Ozil stat. I mean,
and he's done it quicker than he did at Real Madrid as well.
Right. Right, and when you consider how many other people are scoring goals at Real Madrid, so I don't know whether that makes any. I don't know what I don't know why I'm saying.
No, I don't know what to conclude from that. Really,
no, but, neither do I.
anyway, he's now also. I mean, I don't know why I'm kind of all sets. He's matched his Premier League tally for last season as well. So, you know, basically, he's scoring goals now, and that's a good thing, right?
Do you think that the fact that Ozil was there, sort of scoring goals and in playing further forward? Certainly much less deep than he has been in a couple of the recent games was because we had Granit Xhaka in midfield. I know we're going to talk a bit more about Alexis and we're going to talk more about the goals and some of the other players, but I thought Xhaka was really, really good in a not particularly flashy or showy way, but what he did was really efficient. Some of his long passing was absolutely superb.
Yeah, I agree. His passing was amazing. I thought he was excellent, and I thought it was exactly the sort of performance he needed, really, to cement his place in the team. Yeah, there was one pass in particular. I think it was out to Monreal in the first half on the left wing, where not only was the distance perfect, but he sort of managed to kill the ball. You know, it like didn't bounce at all. It was perfectly weighted. So yeah, I thought he was really, really good, and I actually thought that his partnership with Francis Coquelin looked quite promising, because Coquelin was, you know, doing the dirty work, as it were. Not that Xhaka evades any of that. I think actually he does quite a lot on the edge of his own box in terms of blocks and interceptions and tackles, but it enabled him to operate more as a kind of deep playmaker. And maybe you're right, yeah, maybe that did free Ozil up to get closer to Sanchez, but I thought Xhaka gave us a really good base. And actually, you'd have to say that Arsene Wenger's selections all through the team kind of paid off. You know, he went for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain ahead of Alex Iwobi, and I thought he had a good game. And then Gabriel Paulista at right-back, who, not playing his natural position by any stretch, but I thought did really well.
Yeah, I think he did pretty well. You know, there was a moment early on, wasn't there, where he was standing there and Alexis was, like, waving him on. Go down the wing, and then I'll pass the ball to you down there. And I think... I'm not trying to cast any aspersions here, but I just think that there is a slight reluctance at times to move it to the right-hand side when we don't have Bellerin. And that's not necessarily to do with Gabriel or Carl Jenkinson or anything else. I think that sometimes they look and think, okay, we'll go back over the other side. But I thought Gabriel did pretty well, but he wasn't really tested a great deal. He took a couple of knocks, didn't he? He hurt his knee and he got a smack in the head and a nice cuddle from Granit Xhaka to make him feel better. But West Ham, I suppose, when they had somebody like Dimitri Payet out left, would have been expecting him to give Gabriel a few more problems than he did. And he looked like he just could not be arsed.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you could level that quite a lot of that West Ham team. I mean, they do look in dire straits, to be honest. But I think you're right. I thought Gabriel, when I saw him up against Payet, I feared that he'd get, you know, exploited a bit on that side, but he didn't. But when you play him there, you do lose something going forward. That's never going to be his game, is it? He's never going to be a guy who's driving to the byline and whipping crosses in. So it'll be interesting to see what Arsene Wenger does with that position moving forward.
I could be wrong, but I think the third goal did come from Gabriel putting in a cross. He overhit the cross to the back post, and I think Mesut Ozil or somebody picked it up. The third or fourth goal anyway, the Oxlade-Chamberlain one, but one of them came from a Gabriel cross, but there you go. Yeah, I mean, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain on the left worked pretty well. He had a couple of bad moments. There was one in particular where he got in the box and it looked like, will I cross, will I shoot? And he went, Kroot! And, you know, smashed it out. And it was pretty wasteful. And I thought, you know, Arsenal were a bit wasteful in that first half, given the opportunities and the territory that they had. But I thought, overall, he did pretty well there. Great pass for Alexis in the first half when Alexis could have scored. Just took a heavy touch, which was a bit uncharacteristic. But yeah, I thought Ox was pretty good, and he's got some good stats now. He got an assist, he got a goal, so I don't know what that brings him to. 6 goals, I think, already this season.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, so, I mean, when people said we want more from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, we want to see more of end product, basically, we're getting that from him. And he looks like a guy who's found some confidence again. The head doesn't go down as much. He's 10 starts, 10 sub appearances, 6 goals, 3 assists so far this season. So, you know, compared to the last couple of seasons, that really is a step forward.
And he gives you, I mean, Arsene Wenger spoke about the power he gives you on the counter-attack, and that was really noticeable watching the match at West Ham. You know, every time we broke forward, he seemed to be integral to it. But so, yeah, I thought he did really well. I mean, basically, it was an interesting one, because it was kind of like we were so dominant in the first half and we could have scored more goals. We didn't. And you did slightly fear then that we were going to allow West Ham back into it, especially with the kind of ongoing soap opera about will Andy Carroll come on or not.
I was just about to mention that, actually. It was ridiculous, wasn't it? I mean, I don't, you know, I know Andy Carroll scored a hat-trick against us in April, and, you know, that feeds into the story of the game and what a threat he can be. So it's not like we're unaware of that. But this, they seemed just a little bit obsessed with what Andy Carroll was doing. Andy Carroll is warming up at halftime. Andy Carroll's getting ready to come on. No, Andy Carroll's put his bib back on. Andy Carroll's sitting down again. Andy Carroll is just sitting there being Andy Carroll.
At one point, they did literally cross to him to inform us that Andy Carroll was smiling on the BT Sport.
Go on.
It was kind of surreal. And also, after a while, you know, it took him some time to be introduced. I began to wonder, is he even fit? Is he just there as a kind of strange totem to try and spook us? Mm. Do you know what I mean?
I think
send him out. Sorry, you go.
No. I was just gonna say, yeah, it did seem like that. Just his sheer presence, his aura, his Andy Carroll, Old Spice, Blue Wicked Musk would cause us some problems. But, you know, it was 1-0 when he was about to come on. Just as he was waiting on the sidelines, Alexis scored his first goal. Absolutely sensational goal. Andy Carroll came on, and I think his first touch was to, like, clump the ball out for a throw. So,
yeah.
It was a bit of an underwhelming intro, even though he did score, of course.
Yeah, he did score, actually, and Arsenal probably were a little bit guilty on that goal of just not reacting to Payet's free kick. As quiet as Payet was, it was a great free kick. And three West Ham players were kind of running in to knock in the rebound, pretty much unaccompanied. So, we can't have too many complaints about losing the clean sheet there. Mm. But the whole Carroll narrative that ran through the game, it was kind of funny that the moment he was introduced, when the game was relatively finely balanced, West Ham were making some semblance of recovery, that was the moment that Alexis, you know, seized upon the opportunity to score. And it was, I mean, that was an audaciously brilliant goal, I thought, that first goal.
Yeah,
I do think, like, there's been a lot of talk, understandably, about his third goal. But the first one is, there aren't many players who could score that.
No, it was amazing. The first touch was absolutely sensational, wasn't it? Because Mustafi really fizzed that ball into him, and he flicked it around the defender, held him off, shaped the shoot, shaped again, and then lashed the shot across the goalkeeper from what was a really tight angle. You would expect, I don't know if you'd expect your goalkeeper to save it from that kind of angle, but he just had no chance. It was absolutely brilliant centre-forward play that if any player in the world had done, people would be, you know, completely creaming themselves about that goal. So for me, as much as I loved the third goal, I did love the third goal a lot, just the way he sat the goalkeeper down and did the little dummy and the chip. It was the goal of a man of huge confidence. For me, the first goal was the best out of the hat-trick.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And also the timing of it is so important. You know, it's like that American expression about a player being clutch, you know, coming through in clutch moments. It's that point where the game is sort of very finely poised and he was the guy. Mm. He was the guy, he stepped up and he made the difference. And from that point on, it sort of became a question of how many, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes you have a game like that and if Andy Carroll had come on and equalised, and it's 1-1, everyone would go, oh, God, here we go again. This is a road we've been down before, or a road well-traveled, and we don't particularly like this road, but, you know, this is what it is. But when you've got a player like Alexis Sanchez, in the form that he's in, with the ability he has, the quality he has, and the desire to make an impact on games that he has, it's those guys who can set your team apart from the others when it comes to a title challenge. That's what it felt like to me, that, okay, we've had good players down the years, but what we've had probably in our all of our title-winning teams are match winners, guys who, when you really, really need them to do something, are able to and can change the trajectory of a game. And he's becoming that player now for us.
Yeah, he is. And he can, you know, if you look at that first goal, it shows you how much he can accomplish almost on his own. You know, that pass was fizzed into him at pace. And I know that's a good thing, but so few players would have been able to even bring that under control, let alone turn that into a goal scoring opportunity. And, he's he's really having an absolutely outstanding season, because when you look at the numbers as well, I think he's got 13 goals now, something like that. He's joint top scorer in the Premier League. I think he's our most creative player as well in terms of assists. Laid on another goal for Ozil. So, yeah, I mean, Giroud's been brilliant when he's been used this season, and yet you can't knock him for that. When he's come off the bench, he's been very effective. And when he started games, he's been good. But with Alexis through the middle, we just seem a much stronger team. I'm much happier when I see the starting lineup with him up there at the moment.
Yeah. So a great goal from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. What a fantastic finish that was. And then
he should do that more often. You know, he's got that ability to... Well, I mean, he's doing it this season, but he's got the ability to hit the ball from range. Some of his early goals for Arsenal were from real distance. So, you know, we'd like to see a bit more of that, really.
He is our fourth highest goal scorer this season. Alexis Sanchez on 13, Walcott on 9, Mesut Ozil on 8, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain on 6.
That's good.
So he does have the ability, and it feels like there's confidence to his game. And that does make a difference. Arsene Wenger speaking about confidence, obviously, when he was talking about Carl Jenkinson, that he's a guy who's absolutely shorn of any confidence at this moment in time, which is why Gabriel was playing. Conversely, you're looking at Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's beginning to feel like he can contribute in a big way again. So, I mean, all in all, a really positive day. And obviously, he got the assist for the third Alexis goal, slightly offside, ever so slightly. But that takes nothing away from the finish.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I thought in real time that he was probably offside, but the finish is just amazing. I mean, it's kind of like Lionel Messi-esque, isn't it? That little dummy and then the dink. And I think there's a brilliant angle where you can see, I think you tweeted it actually, the reaction of one of the ball boys behind the goal, which is just worth seeking out if you want to find it. Because, I think it sums up how everybody felt, really. Just like stunned by a pretty audacious... bit of skill.
Yeah. And I like the picture afterwards. I think they showed it on BT Sport. Some of the West Ham ball boys getting a selfie with Alexis, and that will show you how good he is. You know, forget the whatever club it is that you support. You're just looking at an amazing player and enjoying what he's doing. So,
yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the great players, they do kind of transcend that thing. You think of Thierry Henry and reception he got at Portsmouth, things like that. With Alexis, it was a weekend, you know, anyone in that stadium would have to applaud that hat-trick.
Yes, I would have.
I'm sure certain West Ham fans didn't, but I think they should have done.
You tell them then. You go and tell them that they should.
Slaven Bilic, why weren't you applauding that?
Yeah, he didn't look like a happy man, did he? It's not going very well for West Ham this season. I mean, where are they in the table? They're pretty low down there, aren't they? This new stadium isn't really doing what it should have done, or what they wanted it to do, I guess. Yeah, they're just a point above the relegation zone. So there you go.
It's interesting down there. Leicester are down there.
Mm.
You know, they look in big trouble as well in the Premier League. So some big clubs.
Surely it has never happened before that a team has won the title one season and been relegated the next. I don't think that's ever happened, has it?
No. I mean, surely if they were to go down this year, what could never happen is to come up, win the title and be relegated in the space of four seasons. Oh, that would be
amazing.
Is it four?
I think.
Yeah, or is it three? So they came up. They only had 1 year in the Premier League before they won it.
Jeez.
So
I'm putting some money on them to go down, just to sort of complete the bizarre, weird trajectory of whatever's happening to Leicester City. Yeah.
And win the Champions League at the same time.
Yeah, that'd be quite a double, wouldn't it? Jesus. Be amazing. So, yeah, look, a really positive weekend then from an Arsenal point of view. Anything else that caught your eye over the course of this?
I'm just trying to think. Well, there was the Clásico, but, of course, we didn't see it in this country because it was within the 3 p.m. blackout.
Oh,
so it wasn't
televised. Yeah, I couldn't watch it either. I was trying to buy some ducting for an extractor fan. That was my exciting weekend.
So we all had exciting weekends. No wonder you had such a good one.
Yeah, that was crazy times, let me tell you.
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, we covered most of it. I mean, it's mainly Jose Mourinho being sad, isn't it? That's the real excitement.
No thoughts. No thoughts. No comment.
Yeah, it really is.
Exactly. Nothing further to add.
Nothing further, Your Honour, other than to just sit back and laugh and enjoy and enjoy a little bit more after you've finished enjoying. You know, I think a number of people have asked, and it might be something we could touch on in the questions, but I'm going to do it here. When we spoke at the Arscast Extra Live, the live show the other week with Amy and Philippe, we were talking about fuck-off wins. That, you know, you have these fuck-off wins which give you confidence. A number of people have asked, was that a fuck-off win?
I don't know. We'd have to ask Amy, I guess, because it was her term. Mm. I mean, it definitely felt like we told West Ham to fuck off.
Yeah, fuck off, West Ham.
Was it as much of a fuck-off win as Chelsea's win, I suppose? That's the question, isn't it? I think their win at City was definitely a fuck-off win because it was a close game, one in which they could have lost, and yet they got the win, quite emphatically so. We were very good against West Ham, but I think, I don't know, I do wonder how much their inadequacy contributed to that. Are you classing it as a fuck-off win?
It's a fuck-off scoreline.
That's certainly true.
You know, and I think you can take some of the fuck-offiness of a fuck-off win from a fuck-off scoreline, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah.
Yeah?
It's relative.
Like, a fuck-off win would be 3-0 against Manchester United at Old Trafford. That would be the fuck-offiest of fuck-off wins. But I do think that a team like we are needed a fuck-off scoreline as well. Away from home, we've been very good away from home. To go to a London rival, a derby game, and batter them 5-1, there's definitely some fuck-off to be taken from that, even if it's not necessarily a completely 100% fuck-off win.
I hear you. Mm. I think you're right. I think it's a fuck-off scoreline.
Yeah.
And we should derive some satisfaction from that.
Mm. Jose, any thoughts on whether that's a fuck-off win?
No thoughts. No thoughts. No comment.
Mm. Okay. I wasn't expecting any from him, actually.
Yeah. No, he's playing his cards close to his chest at the moment.
He certainly is. Poor old Jose. All right. Well, look, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us by Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArsblog. But James, tonight you're going to be representing at the FSF Awards.
I am. It's going to be, well, it'll be lovely. Stiff competition, though, in the best podcast category.
Yeah, there is. You know, big boys in there, in fairness. But, of course, what you're going to do is go along to these awards. You're going to go into the back of the hotel, the Renaissance Hotel, beautiful place that it is there at King's Cross, and you're going to don the outfit of a waiter. What you're going to do then, sneak into the kitchen, serve lasagna to all the other contestants that we face. Tottenham lasagna. You know what I'm talking about here.
I know what you're on about.
Before that, of course, you will have gone to any of the local pharmacies and bought up every single packet of Imodium that they have. So there can be no relief for our competition, and they will be vacating their everything. They'll have to vacate the premises, and you will be left to pick up the award by default. I think that's how it's going to go.
That's the kind of win we want. Would that be a fuck-off win?
Oh, that'd be an absolutely fuck-off win. Fuck-off, go shit yourselves win.
The ultimate.
Absolutely. No, we should say that, you know, that all the other podcasts are very good podcasts, and there's no ill feeling whatsoever. We just really, really want to win.
We really want to win, yeah. And we hope you shit yourself so that we can. And thank you to those who voted as well. I know we put out a couple of shout-outs asking for votes, so, and people said they did. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And to all the people who didn't, if we don't win, it's all your fault!
You damn you!
God,
unless you legitimately prefer one of the other podcasts nominated, in which case, fair enough.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's just a matter of taste, I suppose.
Yeah, some people don't have any, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, well, listen, have a great time there tonight.
I will. I'm going dressed as you, so don't worry.
Oh, brilliant. What are you going to do? Wear glasses now? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I've got my glasses on now.
How are you
now.
Finding?
You know what? It's amazing.
No, you haven't. Right now.
Well, I have them on right now, yeah. Maybe I should take a picture and tweet it or, you know, something. But I've got my glasses on right now. And I was like, at first, I was sort of like, well, I don't necessarily need glasses. I'm pretty sure I don't need glasses. And the guy said, you probably do. And now that I've been wearing them, it's all like, oh, shit, I really do. I can see things so much better, like my computer screen and my phone. It's a revelation, James.
Really? So you just basically didn't realise you needed them. Is that what happened here?
That's basically it. Until such time as it was pointed out to me that whenever I was reading anything or whenever there was anything up close, I'd sort of hold, what's that? You know, you sort of look away from it and stuff. So it turns out, yeah, my close vision is affected. So, yeah, it's quite something to be able to see in, you know, real ways. It's great.
The gift of sight.
Yes, it's marvellous. It's marvellous. But look, when we get on with the questions...
Let's have some questions, yeah?
All right. This one, I'll go first here, because I have one right here.
Okay.
And it's from Mark Ledsome, at Ledsome Mark. And he says, is Shearer right? Is Alexis Sanchez not world-class until he wins the Premier League? Or is Alan jealous that he'd fall over trying a feint like that? I presume talking about the step over for the third goal.
Yeah, I saw this. I saw this on Match of the Day. They reunited Alan Shearer's partnership with Chris Sutton. And, I've never been less pleased to see them in tandem. Chris Sutton's not my favourite pundit, I must be honest with you.
No, he's terrible.
But he's one of the worst. But, they had the old... Gary Lineker was pressing Shearer on whether Alexis now qualifies as world-class, having said previously that, of course, Sergio Aguero was the only world-class player in the Premier League. He said if he wins the Premier League, he will be. I think that's nonsense. I think Alexis Sanchez is a world-class player. I thought that when Shearer said it at the time, and I still do. I think, obviously, if he wins the Premier League, it will make him an iconic Premier League player and a legend at Arsenal. But I think his world-class status, in my mind, is assured, irrespective. What about you?
Is he one of the best players in the Premier League right now? Yes. Is he one of the best players in Europe right now? Yes. By that definition, does that make him world class? He's up there with players who definitely are. So I would say yes. I don't know that he has to win the Premier League to be completely and utterly world class. You judge that by the performances, I guess. And, you know, it's a team game. So individuals can be as good as they want to be or can be and be let down by other things, you know. So I don't necessarily buy into that you have to win the Premier League thing. But look, he looks like a guy who's really trying to drive the club and the team to success. His individual desire to make an impact in games is incredible. And if that's inspirational to others around him, and if it helps drag Arsenal to greater success this season, then there'd be no question about it. But, you know, we know what we're seeing. Arsenal fans, we know what we're seeing with Alexis Sanchez. He's scored more goals than any other Arsenal player this season. He's got more assists than any Arsenal player this season. He is, to all intents and purposes, the main man. And, you know, I think the quality of his performances, his numbers, his stats and everything else would pretty much say, yeah, he's a world-class player. Because who wouldn't have him right now?
That's it.
The other question.
Yeah, well, that's the terrifying question, guys. No, but I mean, what club would not want Alexis Sanchez? I think that's the point. And Shearer, I think, might be on something if Alexis had never won anything in his career. But in the last couple of years alone, he's won the FA Cup. And, you know, we might not think too much about it in England, but he's won the Copa America twice within 12 months with Chile as well,
yeah,
which is an incredible feat. He was the player of the tournament in 2016 at the Copa America. You know, he's won La Liga. He's won the Copa del Rey. He's accumulated plenty of medals in his career, so I don't think it's a question of, oh, he's a good player, but he's never really won anything.
Yeah.
He's won plenty.
Yeah,
the Premier League would crown that, obviously, and in our eyes, because we want it. Or the Champions League would be nice as well. But this time.
Yep. Okay, your question.
My question. Okay. So this is something I tweeted about the other day. But Jazz, who's at Jazz AFC, says, where do Alexis's three goals at West Ham rank among Arsenal's best ever hat tricks? I think on the quality of the goals, it's got to be pretty high, right?
Yeah. I mean, everyone points to the Bergkamp at Leicester one, and there were two absolutely sensational goals in that hat trick. The first one, the curler into the top corner, and then the third one where he juggled the ball and stepped inside. The second goal in that hat trick was good, but it was one of those where didn't the keeper get a touch and it looped up and then in? You know, keepers or defenders getting a touch on the ball always slightly spoils a goal for me, which isn't to say it's not an amazing hat trick. Of course it is. Alexis's first goal, incredible, like truly brilliant goal. Third goal, audacious, fantastic, but a little bit offside. So I wonder, does that take something away from it? Second goal, that's one of those where if your goalkeeper had let that in, I think you might have been a bit disappointed. Would you have been disappointed? Yeah.
I think so, because I mean it's quite clear where he's going to go. Do you know what I mean? He's going to go across him.
But I mean, in terms of the great hat tricks, I'm trying to think. Obviously, Thierry Henry against Roma was a great one.
Kanu at Chelsea.
But
obviously the significance of those goals, you know, coming from 2-0 down to win back 3-2, I think obviously helps that one. There was a few shouts on my Twitter timeline for Olivier Giroud at Olympiacos has been a good hat trick. Last year.
That was one where we had to win that game. It was
quite
a good
people
one.
Said
go on.
Thierry Henry against Inter Milan, which, as far as I recall, was not a hat trick.
He didn't get
scored twice.
He scored twice, yeah, for sure. Older listeners,
Thierry Henry against Liverpool.
Thierry Henry against Liverpool. That was quite the hat trick. In particular, you know, the goal, the dribble. And the importance of that game gives that hat trick something a little bit special, I think. Older listeners will talk about Liam Brady against Tottenham back in the 70s. He scored a hat trick, but I've seen videos, but it's not one that I lived, so I can't see. But you know, it's an absolutely fantastic hat trick. And it's his the second of his Arsenal career, of course, because he got one last season against Leicester away from home.
So he did, and that wasn't a bad hat-trick either, as
not at all. Speaking of Leicester, Simon Parkijevan, I think, sorry, Simon, he says, Leicester lose again this weekend, and he's not the only one to ask this question. Did we dodge a bullet not signing Vardy, who hasn't scored since September the 14th?
Well, I mean, it's looking that way, isn't it? I mean, obviously you don't know how a player would fare in different surroundings, but, I mean, you do wonder how Vardy must feel about his decision now. I mean, obviously he's playing in the Champions League, but he's not even been a guaranteed starter for Leicester this season. He's been dropped on a couple of occasions. He's been in and out of the team. Okazaki's been playing, and they brought the other guy in, Slimani, is it?
Yeah.
But they... I mean, I think we did. And if we had signed Vardy, you know, all this talk about Alexis and what success he's been through the middle, had we bought Vardy, we may well never have seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, look, I thought it was a decent enough move to go for Vardy at the time. I hold my hands up to that. But it seems, and so must Arsene Wenger. You know, he tried to do it, after all.
Yeah.
But it seems to have panned out pretty well.
I think if we were to get an insight into Jamie Vardy's mind, it would sound something a little bit like this.
No! Yeah, that's good. I thought it was going to be another Mourinho no comment, but you've got quite the soundboard there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. And I reckon that might go for Mahrez as well.
Yeah, possibly.
Is that your door?
It is my door. Don't worry. Someone else can deal with that. I'm not going to answer it.
Okay.
I mean, it would be exciting, but I mean, I'm going to just leave it unless it rings again. speaking of Mahrez, I mean, while we're on it, I sense there's probably no appetite from you to go back for Jamie Vardy, but would you still be keeping one eye on the Riyad Mahrez situation, or do you think he's been stained by Leicester's poor performance this season too?
I don't know if he's been stained, but I think he had the chance. I think it could have happened this summer, and he chose to stay at Leicester, and, you know, fair enough, that's his decision. He was loyal, but, you know, someone said, was it someone? I think it might have been Shearer. I found it strange to, you know, agree with anything that he said, but he was hinting essentially that players like Vardy, like Mahrez, who'd been given brand new contracts by Leicester, big, big money contracts, as a reward for what they did last season, to be fair, they're not earning that money. And it feels like they've just settled into a kind of, well, that was a once-off comfort zone thing. So, yeah, they're really not providing any value for money there. I mean, it's interesting. A number of people have been asking today as well. Chris Kingle is one at Mr. CJ Wright. The Draxler situation going on at Wolfsburg. He's having a difficult time there. Was booed by the Wolfsburg fans. The stories from Germany are that, like, it's all broken down very badly between him and Wolfsburg. A January transfer could well be on the cards. I mean, is that somebody that you think we could do? Is that something we should pursue in January?
I don't know. I mean, you know, when you talk about January and you look at the squad, if I look at the first team, rather, as well as Oxlade-Chamberlain's been doing, if I said there was an obvious spot maybe for someone to come in, you do wonder if it could be someone to slip into that front three. I think Alexis and Walcott have done very well this season, but maybe there's a third player to complement them from that left-hand side. Draxler could be that guy. You know, he's not playing like it right now, but the talent is obviously there. There's been long-standing interest from Arsenal, so yeah, that could be one to watch. Maybe. I mean, I guess if it happens, it'll be because it's kind of opportunistic. It's the time to do it. It's a deal that can be done, and it's cheap and practical. I don't think it would be cheap. Whatever happens.
No, I don't think it would be cheap, but probably cheaper than it might have been in the summer. But here's another question, just a follow on from me. A lot of people are asking, of course, after what Alexis did this weekend, you know, how crucial it is to keep him. You would, I imagine, eschew any signings in January if it meant we could secure Alexis and Mesut Ozil on new long term deals.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless, you know, there was an extent to which a certain kind of signing could reassure them. But I think this is going to be about salary. You know, I think it was talk in the Telegraph in the past couple of days about them wanting to have parity with the top earners at the likes of Manchester United.
Mm.
I mean, that's big, big money, you know. I think Zlatan Ibrahimovic is on about 250 grand a week. I think Pogba's on north of 300 grand a week. So, but from an Ozil and Alexis point of view, they probably feel they can get that somewhere.
Yeah, and you made the point as well that, you know, if they go, you've got to spend, you know, that money on replacements to a certain extent. Now, there is, of course, the other issue that when you pay someone like Alexis or someone like Mesut Ozil 250 grand a week, everyone else goes, well, okay, now there's too much of a gap. I accept that they're better and that they deserve more money, but the gap is too big. And it does affect the rest of your wage bill. But is that not the byproduct of having world-class players? That you've got to pay them what world-class players can get elsewhere if you want to keep them. That's just
it's the price,
you know?
Of success to an extent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's like when people used to say, oh, it's terrible the way, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid and all the big clubs across Europe, they covet our players. You know, back in the day when it was Thierry Henry, when it was Robert Pires, when it was Patrick Vieira, you know, when Cesc Fabregas, Barcelona, you know, all these links. But that's what happens when you have really great players. Other teams want them. They don't want the fucking guy who's like 5, 6 out of 10 every week. They want the guy who can give you 10 out of 10 and do it 8 out of 10 most of the rest of the time, you know? So it's just something that you have to contend with. And when you've gone out and you've bought these players for big money and helped them develop into to better talents, I guess, then, you know, you've got to do what it takes to keep them.
I completely agree. I mean, look, right now, Alexis, you know, will feel that he's in an incredibly powerful position in terms of his contract talks. Ozil too, but I think particularly Alexis, the way he's playing. And, you know, Arsenal don't have much choice, really. If they want to keep him, they're going to have to pay him close to what he wants. And I'd suggest it's worth it. I really would. I do think that if you're looking to replace someone like him, it's going to cost you a lot, tens and tens of millions of pounds to find a player of that calibre.
If you can find one.
That's the real question. You know, how long have we been looking for a centre forward of this quality? And we've got one now. We've spent years trying to get somebody like this.
I mean, it was interesting. Go on.
No, I just don't see, you know, I mean, we can all say the name Antoine Griezmann, but it doesn't mean that we can get him.
Yeah, of course. Like,
it's not really, it's impossible. It's difficult to know if we could ever replace it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when we got the news about Sandy Cazorla last week and Arsene Wenger asked, are you going to go out and buy somebody in January to replace Sandy Cazorla? And he said, well, look, we've got plenty of midfielders, but you don't just go out and buy another Sandy Cazorla because, you know, there isn't a guy out there really who can do what he does in his very unique way, you know, that he's a fairly special talent, as is Alexis Sanchez and as is Mesut Ozil. So I think the club are really going to have to push the boat out here because losing one or either of them, it would just send such a terrible message, I think, about what our ambitions are and what our stature is. And, you know, we've got to keep them. And that's going to mean probably a structured deal in some way or another that their main salary isn't quite as big as it appears, but there's a signing on fee or there's image rights. So there are things that they can do to make sure that their earnings are on a par with the best players in the Premier League. And they are two of the best players, certainly in the top five, both of them in the Premier League. And I can understand why they want the money that they want.
I mean, signing on fee might be a smart way to do it. I don't know how these things always work, but that seems to make sense, right? That
you could... only you had somebody in your family that you could ask, James.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I will, but I think, these figures are going to be absolutely enormous. Do you think their future is in any way linked? Do you think if you're Alexis Sanchez or Mesut Ozil, do you think if you see one player going, that would affect how you felt about the club and vice versa?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think if we could sign one, then it goes a long way, or some way at least, to convincing the other that the guy... I mean, those two seem to have a special relationship as well. They seem to get on well on the pitch. They look for each other all the time.
Know,
yeah.
they know they're the best, don't they, basically?
Yeah, I think so.
It feels like that.
I think so. And, yeah. like, yeah, I mean, you could see if, for example, Alexis announced tomorrow, I'm not going to stay, then maybe Mesut Ozil would have a rethink and vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, there could be a fairly strong link between the two, yeah.
I wonder, and you do wonder if they're... agents have a chat and say, well, look, we're going to hold out for this. Do you hold out for that?
Yeah.
It's funny, when Alexis went clear on goal against West Ham, I sort of remarked that part of me was a little bit surprised that he passed, you know, because he can be quite selfish in those scenarios. And someone replied to me saying, well, I don't think he would have passed if it was anyone other than Ozil.
Maybe and so.
There is something in that. They do seem to look for each other, don't they? More than others.
Yes, indeed. All right, I think it's your question.
I think it is, actually. Let's have this one from Mark Starling, who's at MarkStarling5 on Twitter. He says, would you rest the big boys, Ozil, Sanchez, etc., against Basel?
I will be slightly tempted, yeah, a little bit, to be honest. It would depend on how they're feeling. What you don't want to do is necessarily interrupt their momentum or their confidence in how they're playing. But if you look at what's coming up, there's some big games in the Premier League. Obviously, Everton, we've got Stoke, we've got Manchester City coming up. I would be tempted to sort of rotate a little bit, all right, and see what we can do against Basel. I wouldn't not bring them, but I would be definitely tempted to rest them a little bit from the start. If we need them, we can bring them on, but you've got to have a bit of faith in the rest of the squad. You know, Olivier Giroud should be back. Lucas Perez is there. Alex Iwobi can come in. You know, there are options. Aaron Ramsey, exactly. There are options to keep things relatively fresh. And, you know, as much as people want to complain about what happened last week in the EFL Cup against Southampton, there's no doubt in my mind that the fact that we didn't play any of those big boys in midweek had an effect on our performance against West Ham. And that's the trade-off, you know? It's keeping those players fresh for the Premier League. Obviously, you want to win the game. You want to hopefully win the group. And I think we can do that with the squad that we've got against a team like Basel, not underestimating them in any way. But I do think that it probably would be wise. What do you reckon?
Here's another question. Right. Do you think Arsene Wenger will rest the big boys?
I'm not sure. I've found it very hard to second-guess him this season. Normally, you can sort of say, oh, I think he might do this, I think he'll do that. But it's been much more difficult this season that some of the decisions he's made haven't been quite what you would expect. And he's been a bit more willing to take risks and stuff with players. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he just played more or less the same team that beat West Ham. But I think there is room to make changes without it necessarily disrupting too much.
Yeah, I think he'll go with a very similar team, if I'm honest. I think he'll try and keep that momentum going. I think he is eager to try and top the group, you know, at any cost, really. But I personally would probably rest and rotate a little bit, especially given that it's going to be very hard to top the group. We really need a favour from Ludogorets, you know?
Yeah. PSG lost at the weekend, though, so...
They did, indeed, yeah. Heavily so. 3-0 to Montpellier. But I haven't actually looked at that game. I don't know if they were resting players with the Champions League in mind or what have you, but...
Yeah.
We shall see. I would be tempted to rest a couple. It's Stoke, is it, at the weekend after that?
Yeah, Stoke at home, so... Yeah. All right.
Should be all right, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Here is a question from James, another James, at Barrier Freeman. And he says, what advice would you give to someone who appears to have fallen out of love with football, as I seem to? Hashtag ArsCastExtra.
That's very sad. I mean, I'd say review the events of this weekend for a start. And if those can't get you back into love with football, if Jose Mourinho's sad face can't make you love football again, I don't know if there's any help for you. Really.
I agree, and obviously the Alexis Sanchez thing that I would agree, but you know, I would also say that sometimes it's really important to be able to take a step back from football and remember that football doesn't just exist on Twitter, and the people that follow the club don't exist just on Twitter, that there are other things to enjoy about the game. You know, there's the social element. So, you know, if you can watch games with friends or find a good pub to watch it in with other Arsenal fans, that helps. That sort of sense of community really helps. But also remember that it's sort of completely and utterly out of your hands. At the end of the day, you're putting your emotions, you're putting your heart into this thing over which you have no control. And that can be frustrating. But if you step back and just realize, look, it is what it is. It's not the end of the world if things don't go the way that we want them to go. I think that gives you the platform to deal with the crushing, inevitable, heart-wrenching disappointments that football and Arsenal are capable of giving you. And then you have these moments which are so amazingly brilliant as well, when you do win things, when you win the FA Cup, when you do the double, when you go a season unbeaten. You have to be able to deal with the difficult things to really enjoy the great things. So that would be my advice.
That is good advice. The other thing I always find helpful if I am starting to become a bit disillusioned is I think a kick around does wonders for your appreciation of the game. First of all, just because it's like fun, you know, but it also reminds you quite, you know, the level of skill of the people that you're watching as compared to your own. And that can, you know, ease some frustrations and put things in perspective.
Sure, sure. Jose, any thoughts on what James needs to do to fall in love with football again?
No thoughts, no comments.
Yeah, very fucking helpful you are, you cunt.
Yeah, thanks a lot, mate. Yeah. No thoughts whatsoever.
Prick. Have you got a question?
I have, actually. This is from Gunner Outpost on Twitter. Mm. And they inquire, what have you heard about Dan Crowley's return to Arsenal?
I have not heard anything about Dan Crowley's return to Arsenal, other than what we saw last week, where he was... It looks as if there were attitude problems, and he was... Oxford appeared to have cut short the loan and sent him back. And it's the second season in a row that's happened. He was supposed to spend 6 months last season on loan at Barnsley, and that was cut short. So I don't know. I mean... If you heard the podcast a few weeks ago with Stephen Bradley, a really bright young talent over from Ireland who came to Arsenal and got a little bit, I guess, carried away with the money and the fact that, you know, he was a young player at Arsenal. I'm not sure if he thought he was the big cheese or anything like that, but certainly it can have an effect. So I don't know if that's the situation with Dan Crowley, but you'd have to be a little bit worried when for the second season in a row a loan spell hasn't worked out the way you would like. And it's not as if he wasn't playing for Oxford. I think he had 13 appearances and 3 goals, and last season he made plenty of appearances for Barnsley. So there does seem to be something a little bit up.
Yeah, I don't think Arsene Wenger will be too impressed by that. It's an interesting one, Crowley, because he's been very talked about since his mid-teens. He came from Aston Villa in 2013 to Arsenal, and, you know, I mean, there were comparisons with Jack Wilshere and all sorts. He's 19 now, so he's still young, actually. But he's not really been knocking on the door of the first team, has he? I mean, he's been involved in a couple of pre-season games, but beyond that...
Yeah.
Obviously, very, very talented guy, but struggling for a foothold at loan. But that's... I mean, that's not actually that unusual anymore, is it? I feel like increasingly our players, our best prospects don't necessarily do particularly well on loan.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger almost seems to prefer... I mean, even a guy like Tuber Akpom, you know, who has been out various loan spells, various clubs, hasn't set the world alight yet, doesn't seem to have dramatically altered the way Arsene feels about him. So, well, I don't know, time will tell. I think hopefully these attitude problems are nothing serious, because it would be a real shame if they undermined the career of a talented guy.
All right, Bobby, at Bobby Vertigo, wants to know, how concerned should we be, having kept only 4 clean sheets in 14 league games? We're on course for 38 goals conceded after 38 league games, which is a higher tally than any successful title-winning team this century, with the exception of Manchester United in 2012-13, who let in 43 goals. And he says, cheers. Cheers.
Cheers, fella.
Cheers.
Yeah, I saw that, actually. I saw that question and highlighted it myself. I mean, it doesn't sound great on paper, doesn't it? They were on course to concede more goals than any other title-winning team. But then, not that many teams have conceded fewer than us when you look at the league table. It's only Chelsea, who've conceded 11 in the Premier League, as right. compared to our 14, and Spurs, who've conceded 10, but not scored very many.
Right.
So we actually have the third high, you know, the third lowest goals against total in the Premier League. So it's not the disaster it necessarily sounds like. I wonder if that means maybe there are more goals going in. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's this curious thing where we seem a little bit more solid as a team, but occasionally defensively vulnerable. I think basically the team's been recalibrated to be more attacking. I think we're better going forward than we were last year by some distance. So I suppose we're not being hurt as much by the defensive frailties.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so, as long as you keep scoring. And I think probably that's the right way to look at it, rather than historically looking at how many goals people have let in, if you want to look at our defensive record in comparison to the teams around us. And that would give you a better idea of where we are, you know? So we're not too far away from Chelsea or too far away from Tottenham, really. You know, I do think, though, that they're... Sometimes you feel like we're going to concede. Do you know what I'm trying to say there? That we always feel a little bit vulnerable. Now, whether that's just me being fatalistic and looking at every available opportunity for the opposition as a clear-cut chance, but I think to a certain extent, we have got away with it a little bit defensively this season. There have been moments where, had the opposition been more clinical or more efficient, then our season might not be going quite as well as we would like. But then again, that's part and parcel of football as well. But I think we could do with just being a little bit tighter at the back. But I don't think we have to be especially concerned, as long as we're clicking from an attacking point of view. When that vulnerability that you have is coupled with, I guess, an impotence up front, then you'd be really worried. But I think this is a team, when you look at the players that we have for those front three positions, it's a team with plenty of goals in it, so I think we can get away with it.
They say, I don't know who they are, probably people like Chris Sutton, but they say leagues are founded on good defences rather than good attacks. Do you think there's truth in that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're difficult to score against, then your chances of getting points from a game are increased, particularly if you can couple that with some good attackers. But yeah, look, George Graham's teams that won the league were famously defensively solid, weren't they? And, you know, I don't think we're ever going to be a truly outstanding defensive team under Arsene Wenger. I don't think it's just not the way that we play. And I think he's even said as much this season, that the increased fluency in our attack has left us a little bit more exposed at the back. But that seems to be a trade-off that he's willing to deal with if it means that we're more threatening at the other end. So it's not quite like Ozzy Ardiles is Tottenham, if you remember. But it is part and parcel of the way Arsene Wenger wants to play football, and that means there's an inherent risk when you pile forward that you're going to leave yourself a little bit exposed. But, I don't think we have to be especially worried. So,
okay.
All right.
That's not especially worried, then.
Let's not. That's me not worrying.
Oh, I see, right.
Yeah.
I thought that was you being cut off, but no, it's just you not worrying.
Yeah, I was just sitting here not worrying especially.
Well, I need you to worry a bit more than that. I need you to worry enough that we fill the podcast with sound.
Okay, hang on then.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, okay, that's great.
That's good. Is that better? That's my not worrying especially sound, yeah.
That's absolutely ideal.
All right, have you got one more?
I haven't actually. That was my last one. You've pinched it from me.
All right. Okay. Well, here's a couple to finish with. JJ Ball wants to know, how dare you?
How very dare we? I guess, it's just confidence, isn't it? Like, yeah. Alexis with the chip. How dare he?
How
confidence.
Absolutely. Yeah, self-belief and some nice rubbing oils.
That's it. But the thing is, if we win at the SFF Awards tonight, that only then and only then can we really be called a world-class podcast.
Podcast, indeed, yeah. That'd be amazing. You're gonna have to make a speech if we win. That would be fantastic.
Oh, interesting.
In a room full of, your podcasting peers, football journalists, writers, James Richardson from Guardian Football Weekly podcast. He's the host,
well,
I think,
isn't
he?
If we've won. Yeah, exactly. He's got a foot in both camps there.
Yeah, he'll just like throw the trophy at your head. Fuck you.
Yeah.
But if they win, then there's got to be big questions asked if they win. Oh, the presenter of the awards has just won the best podcast, you say. Oh, how could that have happened, I wonder, you might say.
Well, I will say.
You will say.
I'll be asking those questions. I'll be stood on a table asking those questions.
Fix! Fix!
Yeah.
Just shout it out. And then you can try and get in a fight with Robbie Savage if he's there. Like that time he tried to get in a fight with Barry Glendening.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago. Well, that was fun.
If he's there, I'll remind him of it. Mm. See how that goes down.
Yeah, do. You know, if Robbie Savage is there, I was talking to him and he said, I'm going to tell you the real reason why Arsenal re-signed Mathieu Flamini. Thierry Henry told me what it is. And I went, oh, that sounds interesting. What is it? And he went, no, I can't tell you. I was like, oh, you fucking dick. Tell me now.
Oh.
And he wouldn't tell me. So maybe there's some mystery there that Robbie Savage is prepared to release now that Mathieu Flamini is no longer an Arsenal player. He's doing his pointing at Crystal Palace.
I can only assume that it's something like, I don't know, Arsene Wenger knew that he would get on so well with Mesut Ozil. He signed Mathieu Flamini to lure Mesut Ozil from Real Madrid.
Yeah.
It must be that.
That's exactly it. All right, final one. It comes from Tom Stevens on Facebook, who wants to know, would it be funnier if a bee flew into Harry Kane's mouth during a match, or if Jose Mourinho totally lost the plot and knocked out Wayne Rooney?
Harry Kane already sounds a bit like he's got a bee in his mouth when he speaks.
He does a bit, in fairness. He does. I once flew into a bee. No, I cycled into a bee.
I was going to say, you can't fly, so I reckon...
Yeah, that was wrong. I can cycle, though, and I was cycling my bike very fast as a kid, and there must have been a bee just sort of buzzing along, minding his own business, and I went, zoom, and, like, literally, my lip was enormous. It was huge. It like, got stung by the bee, and the bee, I assume, went off and died. Isn't that what happens when a bee stings you? Like, the stinger comes out and it rips out the insides of the bee, and the bee is like, ah, this is a terrible, painful way to die. Why did you fly into
bees
my
are
arse?
Like a, they're like an allegory for nuclear war. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've got a big red button, but the consequences for them are awful. So
oh,
it's
wow.
Kind of,
that's the most profound thing I think anyone has ever said on this podcast.
If only we'd said it before the voting closed for the SOF.
It'd be a shoe-in. Well, I mean, we know the whole thing is fixed anyway. It's just completely
that's
fixed,
true.
You know.
It is fixed. That my aunt is allergic to bees, but
she once
ate a cake that had a bee on it.
I think you told this story before, all right, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's worth repeating, I just don't know how you could eat something not knowing there was a bee on it. It beggars belief. If I was allergic to bees, I'd be looking out for them all the time. I wouldn't be just willy-nilly putting things in my mouth, wondering, oh, there might be a bee on it, there might not. I'd be checking.
Well, I mean, it could have been a bee-coloured cake.
Yeah, like a bee-themed cake, like a little sugar bee on it.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, maybe. But what's the question? A bee
oh, yeah,
in Harry
a bee
Kane's
or
mouth?
Jose Mourinho losing the plot and knocking out Wayne Rooney, I assume, like by punching him in the head. I think that would be by far the funnier.
Yeah, it might happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looks like he's on the verge of a breakdown. It could happen.
Yeah, but come on. There's no way he could do it. It's Jose Mourinho Rooney would just stand there. Rooney looks like a guy that you could punch 50 times in the head and he'd go, again! You know, one of those guys.
I think Mourinho would break his hand on that, yeah.
That would be funnier. That would be quite funny. That
would be funny. When Jose Mourinho punches Wayne Rooney in the head and breaks his hand in doing so.
And a bee then flies into his mouth and down his gullet, like that, in Star Wars, where it goes down into the Death Star, drops off a bomb, like stings him on the appendix. And that would be hilarious.
I think a couple of bees fly down Jose Mourinho's mouth, breed inside him, and then a fleet of bees bursts forth from inside him and kill him.
That would be fucking... Imagine at his post-game press conference, Jose, have you got anything to say? And instead of saying...
No thoughts. No comments.
He would just be like... and like loads of bees just spew out of his mouth. And Jeff Shreves is running off going, no, I don't like bees.
Yeah, he's allergic.
He is allergic. I believe he once had a cake, though, Jeff Shreves. He had a cake with a bee on it. Is Jeff Shreves your aunt? Is that what we're saying here?
Yes. Yeah, it all ties up.
Auntie Jeff. All right, well, listen, have a great night tonight at the FSF Awards. Cause mayhem. And of course, I certainly will. Be very gracious, of course, if we win. That's the only thing.
Okay, is there anyone you'd like me to mention in the speech?
Let me think about that. Yes, Harvey Keitel. If you could mention Harvey Keitel, that would be fantastic, because he's been, I mean, as you know, he's been a tremendous help to us here on the podcast, a great friend to us down the years. So this one's for you, Harvey, if we win.
Thanks, Harvey. Thanks for doing all the editing and stuff. We appreciate it.
Top man. All right. Well, look, we'll have an Arsecast on Friday. James and I will be here to look back at the game against Stoke next Monday on the Arsecast Extra. So until then, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.